The Communist Party of the Philippines slams government's move to block its websites. Meanwhile, the inclusion of some alternative news outlets in the order raising concerns over the possible blocking of other news sites. Later on in the program, we'll tackle this issue with Phil Robertson of Human Rights Watch. Active COVID cases in the Philippines climb back to 5,000. And the United Nations seeking $15 million in urgent aid for quake-stricken Afghanistan. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Our top story at this hour, the Communist Party of the Philippines describes the barefaced censorship, the National Security Council's order to have its websites banned. Over 20 other websites, including that of alternative news outlets Bulatlat and Pinoy Weekly, as well as some progressive groups with alleged links to rebels, have been blocked by the National Telecommunications Commission. But the CPP insists only seven of the banned sites have official links to them. The CPP spokesperson describes this as a desperate move to censor online criticism and dissent. Meanwhile, Malacanang spokesperson Martin Andanar and Justice Undersecretary Adrian Sugay say there are legal remedies for those who feel aggrieved by the order. The incoming chief of the National Intelligence Coordinating Agency vouches for the validity of the allegations made by Secretary Hermógenes Esperon against progressive groups and alternative media outlets. Ricardo de Leon believes the National Telecommunications Commission would not have carried out Esperon's request if it was not backed by evidence.
Hindi ka naman nagbibigay lang ng memo dyan eh. Pag gumawa ka ng request, may kasama parati niyan ng mga documents, naka-attach lahat yan as a proof to validate your request.
De Leon also asserting it was the founder of the Communist Party of the Philippines, Joma Sison, who red-tagged some of the groups affected by the NTC order.
Sino ba yung nagsabing mag-red-tag? Eh, di ba si Joma Sison? In the tapes that we are observing, siya nagdideklara, itong ganitong, yan ang front natin, ito yung ano, not the government forces. So let us start with that first premise. And we can show videos on how Joma Sison was really proudly tagging these organizations. Kasi pinapalabas natin yan sa lahat ng mga estudyante natin.
For Bulatlat's managing director, the move to block their website was done without any substantial reason and basis. Len Olea also challenges Secretary Esperon to show evidence.
We challenge Esperon to provide his basis. It is not up to us to provide evidence because the action came from him. Mm-hmm. And it is really unacceptable that these ISPs immediately implemented the order without questioning first the legality and the moral authority of the NTC to implement such blatant, illegal, brazen, and unconstitutional order.
The National Union of Journalists of the Philippines says this puts other news websites in danger of being blocked.
The bigger issue here is the arbitrariness of the list, no? Na parang it could be anyone, no? It just so happens that it's Bulatlat and Pinoy Weekly, no? But they could do it to anyone. The fear here is that they could cite whatever basis they want, no? Dahil ang labo ng allegations, it's not even an allegation really. They just made a determination that these sites are affiliated or supportive of. It could start with Bulatlat and Pinoy Weekly, pero it could easily spread to other news sites. It could easily spread to other websites. Is the fear.
The Human Rights Watch, or the group Human Rights Watch, also slamming the National Security Council's blocking of media and civil society websites. It calls the move a brazen attempt to undermine and censor media outlets. Joining us now is the Deputy Asia Director of Human Rights Watch, Phil Robertson. Phil, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today and welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Right. So in your statement, Phil, you said that the NTC must make sure
that press freedom and freedom of expression online is upheld and respected. Phil, how is it that this is about that now and not about the groups on the list, the groups on the order, and their alleged links, or that they are alleged fronts of the communist group?
Well, we have two of these groups that are listed are progressive news sites. These are sites where journalists are working. They are covering human rights issues. They are covering land seizures. They're covering other basic information that is of interest to the Philippines people. And these are professional working journalists. So to lump them into revolutionary armed groups that are taking up arms against the Philippines is simply inappropriate. If we look at other groups on the list as well, I mean, the Save Our Schools Network, the Rural Missionaries, I mean, it looks like the National Security Council went through its entire wish list of people it doesn't like to list on this group of websites to be blocked. And the shocking thing is that the National Telecommunications Commission just rolled over and said, sure, no problem.
And what does that say about the shrinking space for dissent?
Well, what it says is that there has to be a massive pushback against this illegal order that was done without any basic evidence. I mean, claiming that there's an association of these groups with some of these revolutionary organizations without providing evidence is frankly unacceptable. It's a clear violation of human rights, and the National Security Council and the National Security Council Secretary General should be ashamed of themselves. It's shocking that they claim that as a democracy, they can do this kind of thing. You know, it really boggles the mind.
In fact, Phil, you say in your statement that government has offered no solid evidence whatsoever to back up its claims. You went on to say that no claims that these groups work with the communists and are preparing to bear arms against the government. That's included in your statement. But let me ask you, what have these groups shown you that would prove to you that they are not fronts, or they do not have links to the communists?
The whole principle of rule of law is innocent until proved guilty. The accuser has to provide the evidence. The accuser here is the National Security Council. You know, we're not going to spend our days as a human rights organization trying to basically check the bona fides of every organization in the Philippines. If the National Security Council could provide specific evidence that justifies their decision, then we would certainly take a look at that. Because, of course, there is a national security exemption to various different elements of human rights international law. But nothing has been provided. You know, this is just a smear tactic by the National Security Council to, you know, list 28 groups that it doesn't like and it decided is trying to censor. And it's pre-publication censorship, too. I mean, you're talking about a lack of evidence then leading to a blockage across the board. And I would hope that the NTC would recognize that they can't just be a sort of a willing pawn in this play, but they have a regulatory authority to actually assess whether these allegations that have been brought forward by the National Security Council have any merit or not. And it seems that they're derogating their responsibility to do that.
But as we speak, these websites have been blocked already. Access to these websites have been blocked already. What does that tell you?
Well, it tells me that the blockage has to be undone and that there has to be a major pressure campaign against the Philippines government to stop this unjust rights-abusing action.
You know, I was talking to an undersecretary of the Interior Department yesterday, Phil, and he said in so many words that these groups will use freedom of expression. They will claim red tagging. They will claim what you have been saying since the beginning of this interview to gain sympathy from the public. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that freedom of expression also implies that people can say things that others don't agree with. The reality is that the right of freedom of expression and media freedom involves that word freedom. And, you know, the idea that somehow this official thinks it's wrong for these groups to plead their case to the public because they have been blocked shows a sort of shocking lack of awareness by that official about what democratic freedoms and human rights are. You know, it's a scathing indictment of the mindset of some of these security officials in the Philippines that they somehow think that because they determine that a group is one that they don't like or they think that is doing something that they don't like, that they can just act without evidence to violate rights. I think this is a result of 6 years of the Duterte administration, where human rights have basically been trampled under.
Mm. And tell us about the danger of this kind of thinking, because basically they're saying, Phil, that what they know for sure, and that's all that matters.
Well, in a democratic society, you have to make your case. I think that every Filipino would agree with that, that you have to make the case that if you're going to say you have to do something, that you have to present a rationale, you have to present evidence, and you have to show that what you are going to do has a basis in fact and is it involves due process. And none of this decision involves any of that. This is an arbitrary order out of the blue by an outgoing National Security Council head to basically hit the bunch of organizations he's heading out the door. I would hope that the incoming administration of Bongbong Marcos would immediately rescind this order.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because that's actually the next question here. I mean, we do know that this administration is in its final days. Do you think that the next administration should review the order?
I think they should review the order, and I think they should revoke it. And if in fact there is evidence that is the basis of these determinations, then they should make that evidence public. We're prepared to look at any evidence that the government is prepared to make or provide to claim that these organizations like progressive news sites or Save Our Schools Network or various other trade union groups are somehow involved in armed conflict. But I don't think that the evidence is going to be found.
What do you make of the possible explanation that, they're not going to make whatever evidence they have public because this might just be tantamount to telegraphing their punches? So why would they do that?
I'm sorry, that glitch. What was that? Can you repeat your question, please?
So you were saying present the evidence. If you have the evidence, present the evidence. You'd gladly take a look at that as well. But what if the reasoning behind not making the pieces of evidence public is because they might be telegraphing their punches and they don't want to do that?
Well, I mean, look, if you're going to restrict rights, you have to provide rationales. The idea that somehow we have information that we don't want to share, but on the basis of that information, we can do this, is a path to dictatorship. Denies the right of people to see the evidence presented against them, or groups to see the evidence presented against them, and to, make counter arguments or appeal. It's shocking that the authorities would think that that was somehow okay. I mean, it betrays a sort of national security state mentality that has become more pervasive during the Duterte administration, and which we hope President Marcos will review and reverse, because, this does damage to the standing of the Philippines as a democratic country on the international stage.
And finally, you said, hopefully, the next administration will review and reverse this order. We know how that's going to affect the groups on that list. But how will it affect and how will it help the incoming administration if they do decide to take another look at this order and maybe even rescind it? How will it help them?
Well, we've already seen people of the incoming Marcos administration saying that they want to review the whole sort of red tagging phenomenon, making scurrilous allegations and smears against groups by the National Security Agency, by the Ministry of Defense, and by others, simply is not productive. And that ultimately it is causing damage to the Philippines, both domestically and internationally. We would hope that the Marcos administration would reflect the fact that that is something that needs to be reviewed. And it looks to me a little bit like, this is some national security officials in the Philippines trying to box in their successors to try to, say you have to continue our policy, by making an extreme move at the last minute as they're heading out the door. That's ungracious. It's unacceptable. It's outrageous, frankly. And I would hope that the Marcos administration would review and revoke this order.
And if they do that, would you consider that a step forward? And how do you think that would pave the way moving forward for these groups and the relationship with the incoming administration?
Well, I think it would show that the incoming administration is prepared to be reasonable and prepared to operate on the basis of facts, which is all that we can ask for. In terms of the how it engages with some of these various different organizations or groups, I mean, certainly some of these groups are left wing. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, as long as they're operating within the confines of a peaceful discourse and exercising their civil and political rights, the government should be prepared to listen to what they say, and they should be prepared to listen to their arguments. If they agree or not is another matter. But the thing is, the process of democratic dialogue, freedom of information and freedom of expression needs to be preserved in order for the Philippines to continue to function as a multi-party democracy.
Phil Robertson there, Deputy Asia Director of Human Rights Watch. It was nice talking to you. Thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate the insights. Take care. Keep safe.
Thank you very much.
Now, back here in the newsroom, censorship happening in Kuwait. The government has revoked the licenses of 90 online news sites and 73 media outlets. A government official said these organizations were targeted for allegedly spreading false news. This comes amid political tensions after the country's parliament was dissolved Wednesday. Kuwait's crown prince has also called for new elections within months as disputes escalate between the legislature and cabinet. I'm going to take a break now. Up ahead, the man who attacked a Filipino family in North Hollywood last month, now in police custody. More on that story when we come back. Stay with Dateline Philippines here on AMC. We are back here, still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC, and here's another look at our headlines this noon. The Communist Party of the Philippines slams government's move to block its websites. Meanwhile, the inclusion of some alternative news outlets in the order raising concerns over the possible blocking of other news sites. Human Rights Watch hopes the incoming Marcos administration will review and revoke the order. Active COVID cases in the Philippines climb back to 5,000. And the United Nations seeking $15 million in urgent aid for quake-stricken Afghanistan. Back with more news, President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. graces the celebration of Bacoor's 10th cityhood anniversary. Our correspondent Katrina Domingo now joins us live with an update. Kat, over to you.
Hermina, President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr. went back to Cavite this morning to personally thank Caviteños for giving him a million votes in the recently concluded 2022 national elections. He said that if not for Cavite's help, he would not have had a majority, an overwhelming majority of votes that catapulted him to the presidency in the recently concluded polls. In his speech during the 10th cityhood anniversary of Bacoor, Marcos also underscored that a lot of Caviteños are his allies. Among these are Senator Bong Revilla Jr., who is part of Lakas CMD, the political party of Vice President-elect Sara Duterte, and Cavite Representative Jesus Crispin Remulla, the brother of Cavite Governor John Vic Remulla, who is also set to become his justice secretary come July 1st. Hermina, aside from thanking Caviteños for their support in the national elections, Marcos also noted that he was instrumental in the cityhood of Bacoor as he was the chairperson of the Senate Committee on Local Government that approved the bill that proclaimed Bacoor as a city back in 2012. This is also why Bacoor Mayor Lani Mercado Revilla repeatedly thanked Marcos in her speech, noting that if not for Marcos's help, then Bacoor may not have been a city today. Mercado Revilla also underscores that she and her allies in Cavite will also support President-elect Marcos's decision to personally head the Department of Agriculture in the coming months. Mercado or Revilla also mentioned in her speech that she hopes that the construction of 3 LRT stations in Cavite, as well as other infrastructure projects here in her domain, would push through seamlessly under the Marcos administration. Hermina.
All right, Kat, you know, there have been reports coming out that there are new additions to President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr.'s cabinet. Is there any sense that you get that they're going to announce new names soon? And do you have any inkling as to who those people are?
No formal announcement yet from the camp of President-elect Marcos, but we received word from several sources that assert that the DOTR, that the Secretary of the Department of Transportation, may be announced either today or tomorrow. We have received names, but our sources have yet to confirm this on record, so I'm not yet at liberty to say the names on air. Carmina.
And so we wait. Katrina Domingo there joining us live from Bacoor in Cavite. Thanks, Kat. Take care. Keep safe. Well, back here in the newsroom, preparations continue for next week's inauguration of President-elect Marcos. The Philippine National Police again inspected the National Museum, the venue for the event. PNP officer in charge Vicente Dano says more than 7,000 policemen will be securing the area on June 30. The Interior Department earlier said it has received reports of a plan by leftist groups to disrupt the event.
The implementation, lalong-lalo na po yung pagpunta rito sa area, will be very, very strict. Ano? Pinagbabawal po natin yung pagdadala ng mga bags, no? And any other covered materials. We will only allow transparent materials.
Sa ngayon, wala kami nakikitang banta o threat, no, sa inauguration ng President-elect Ferdinand Marcos Jr., no? Except yung mga rallies na po pwedeng gawin ng mga kaliwang grupo, nakahanda na rin tayo dyan.
At least 500 Coast Guard personnel will also be deployed in parts of the Pasig River.
Medyo rotor-repair yan din yung Pasig River. So dyan, yung PSG, control dyan ng Presidential Security Group. And of course, the Coast Guard, we are deploying assets there. Nag-implement tayo ng closure dyan kapag merong malalaking event ang Pangulo natin.
Active COVID-19 cases in the Philippines breached the 5,000 mark, the highest since May 3rd. That's after the Health Department confirmed 593 new infections Wednesday. More than half were recorded in Metro Manila. The agency has observed a sharp rise in new coronavirus cases in the capital region, while the rest of Luzon and the Visayas have also shown an increase. But it notes the nationwide healthcare utilization rate remains at low risk.
Nanatiling higit sa kalahati ang asymptomatic, which are the green bars, at mild, yellow bars. Nananatili ring mas mababa sa 1,000 na kasalukuyang nasa 554 cases ang severe at critical admissions since the middle of March of this year, currently showing a slight increase in the recent few days. This, however, remains to be less than 1% of our total hospital admissions.
More than 70 million Filipinos have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19, with more than 14.7 million having also received their booster doses. The COVID-19 situation in Quezon City now at moderate risk amid an increase in infections. The Quezon City government announced de-escalation on Facebook, citing data from the Octo Research Group. The city's daily average cases, positivity rate, and reproduction rate all went up this week, but its healthcare utilization rate remains low since most of the cases are mild or asymptomatic. Medical frontliners here in the Philippines reiterated their call for higher salaries as the new administration prepares to take over. Dr. Benito Atienza of the Philippine Medical Association says this is crucial for the well-being of health workers. He also hopes for better coordination between the incoming administration and the medical community.
Sa susunod ng administration po, umaasa po ang ating mga pamunuan na ating mga healthcare workers, lalo na po sa medical, ang Philippine Medical Association, na sana po makipag-ugnayan pa rin po ang DOH po natin, ang pamunuan ng DOH sa Philippine Medical Association po at sa ating mga samahan ng ating mga healthcare workers, itong mga nurses, mga midwives, at sana po, sabi nga po natin, sana taasan ang mga sweldo ng ating mga doctors, lalo na ating mga nurses, para hindi sila pumunta sa abroad at doon na humanap ng greener pasture. Kasi po, talagang during this pandemic, nahirapan na ating mga nurses.
World News, rescuers race against time to find survivors in Afghanistan following a magnitude 5.9 earthquake that struck overnight near its border with Pakistan. At least 1,000 people are confirmed dead, while 1,500 others were hurt. Authorities say many are still trapped under the rubble. Heavy rains and ensuing landslides and mudslides are complicating rescue efforts there. Initial data from the United Nations show over 2,000 homes were destroyed in the region. The UN says at least $15 million in emergency relief aid is needed immediately.
We're concerned about not just non-food items and getting people into shelters and providing medical supplies, but also preventing waterborne diseases. Obviously, destruction of such scale, plus rain and lack of sanitation, an outbreak of a disease, and that could be a waterborne disease, and would be a very, very unwelcome scenario.
The school district police chief of Uvalde, Texas, has been placed on administrative leave after mishandling last month's tragic school shooting. Pete Arredondo was found to have delayed launching an assault on the mass shooter who slaughtered 19 students and two teachers at Robb Elementary School on May 24th. The head of the Texas Department of Public Safety on Tuesday labeled that response an abject failure. Arredondo defended his actions, saying officers could not find a key to unlock the door to the classroom. The investigation, however, found the door was not locked. Well, the man who attacked a Filipino family in North Hollywood last month, now in police custody. Our North America Bureau correspondent Steve Angeles filed this report.
Nicholas Weber, the man filmed attacking a Filipino family at a North Hollywood fast food parking lot last month, is now in police custody. Sheriff records show that he was booked on June 21st and is held on a $300,000 bail. Court records have also revealed that the 31-year-old has a lengthy criminal record in Los Angeles County. He has spent prison time and county jail time on a number of different charges over the past decade for cases that have included theft, domestic violence, and probation violation. But his most high-profile case came on May 13th of this year. After his Jeep had bumped the Roque family's car in a fast food drive-thru, Weber was filmed spewing racial slurs at the family before physically attacking them in the parking lot. While police did eventually arrive on the scene, he was cited out and ordered to appear in court on June 8th. However, Weber found trouble again 2 days later. He was charged with driving under the influence on May 15th. Not long after that, Weber was charged with theft and public intoxication on May 31st. So after Weber skipped his June 8th court date to answer to the battery charges from the incident with the Roque family, a judge issued a warrant for his arrest. The Roque family, along with the Filipino community, staged a rally last week outside of the Van Nuys courthouse, calling for his arrest and prosecution. Weber is due on court on Thursday to face his theft and public intoxication charges. As for the Roque case, Weber is charged with one count of felony battery and one count of misdemeanor battery, both with hate crime enhancements. The family, as well as the community fighting alongside them, welcome this latest development and are now awaiting word from authorities on how their case will proceed.
We're going to take another break. Still ahead, U.S. President Joe Biden seeks a suspension of the federal gas tax to combat high oil prices. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with ANC. Back with more news. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky vows to do everything to get his country's candidacy to the European Union approved. The statement comes as European leaders are set to formally greenlight the status at a summit in Brussels on Thursday. According to Zelensky, he held marathon phone negotiations on Wednesday to boost his campaign. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has also invited Zelensky to the G7 summit, which starts on Sunday, to come up with what he called a Marshall Plan to help Ukraine recover. Scholz says it's important for European leaders to stay firmly on course with their Russian sanctions and financial support for Ukraine, until President Vladimir Putin finally recognizes his, quote, colossal misjudgment. The World Bank announces $30 billion in assistance in response to the ongoing food crisis. World Bank President David Malpass said the funds would help developing countries deal with the interlocked food and oil price crises. The United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, meanwhile slammed President Putin for weaponizing oil and food.
Not only see the weaponization of food and humanitarian access as a tool of warfare in Ukraine, but you see the weaponization of global hunger as Putin tries to use misinformation to convince developing countries that their food problems stem from sanctions rather than from the export controls that the Russian government placed on fertilizer and, of course, the very intentional, willful, and devastating blockade on Ukrainian grain, sunflower oils, and others, which are such huge sources of food and commodity in developing countries, particularly in Africa.
U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell says while the U.S. economy remains strong, a series of aggressive rate hikes could eventually trigger a recession. During his testimony before the U.S. Congress, Powell also admitted the world's largest economy could see further inflation surprises as it faces an uncertain global environment. Powell says the Fed remains committed to bringing down U.S. inflation, which has reached 40-year highs. The central bank announced its sharpest rate hike of 75 basis points just last week and vowed more action to combat the price surge. Powell has said a similar hike is likely to happen in July. U.S. President Joe Biden calls for a 3-month suspension of the federal gasoline tax to combat high oil prices. He says such a move would bring some financial relief to Americans. He also urges states to temporarily suspend their fuel taxes, which are often higher than federal rates. U.S. pump prices are averaging nearly $5 a gallon.
Now, I fully understand that a gas tax holiday alone is not going to fix the problem, but it will provide families some immediate relief, just a little bit of breathing room as we continue working to bring down prices for the long haul. To the companies running gas stations and setting those prices at the pump, this is a time of war, global peril, Ukraine. These are not normal times. Bring down the price you are charging at the pump to reflect the cost you are paying for the product. Do it now. Do it today. Your customers, the American people, they need relief now.
The suspension of the 18 cents per gallon federal gas tax and 24 cent diesel tax requires congressional action. Lawmakers from both parties have expressed resistance to Biden's proposal. Protests against high fuel prices in Ecuador have reached their 10th day. That's after the demonstrators led by indigenous people rejected the president's offer for a dialogue. The indigenous group wants the state of emergency lifted and for security forces to leave a public park in the capital of Quito, where the rallies are being held. The government has refused to end the state of emergency as it claims 18 police officers have gone missing following an attack by the protesters on a police station. Plane tickets set to become more expensive here in the Philippines. Aviation authorities see higher fuel surcharges driving up airfares next month as jet fuel prices continue to soar. The Civil Aeronautics Board says the surcharge rate could jump from what's called as a level 7 to a level 11. Under level 11, a fuel surcharge of between 300 to 1,000 plus pesos can be collected for a one-way domestic flight. The surcharge for international flights can be much higher, from between 1,100 to over 8,700 pesos.
Kasi nung naglagay tayo ng hanggang level 7, hindi natin alam na magkakagera at magkakaroon ng ganitong crisis. No? Pero nagulat tayo nung magkaroon ng crisis, isang kisap mata lang, off the charts na tayo. So nilagay na natin level 20, but we are hoping that we will never reach that point.
Budget carrier Cebu Pacific also stressing the need to raise airfares because of the impact of high fuel costs. Cebu Pacific Air CEO Lance Gokongwei says, after COVID-19, high inflation and a weaker peso are among the challenges hounding the industry now.
Price of fuel has more than doubled compared to the same period last year. In fact, for aviation fuel, I think it's 2.5 times. No? So really, it's a tremendous impact on us. We do have to increase fares, not to reflect the increasing cost, because if not, we're not sustainable. But I have to say, at this point, we're trying to mitigate this as much as possible.
Still, Gokongwei says Cebu Pacific's operations are returning to pre-pandemic levels and that they intend to rehire many retrenched workers. The Philippine Land Transportation Franchising and Regulatory Board ready to extend its free ride program if an additional budget is approved. The agency ended the Libreng Sakay program in some routes last week, citing depleting funds. The LTFRB says around 80% of the program's 7 billion peso budget has been used up.
If we say that the funds are exhausted, but because of the widespread participation, we can say that more and more, right. Commuters were served. Especially high volume routes were served. That's why many people are really clamoring for the extension. We would want to extend the program, but of course, we would need some supplemental budget on this.
Provincial bus operators demanding a fare hike. Alex Yaga, the executive director of the Provincial Bus Operators Association of the Philippines, says the increase in diesel and toll prices have made it difficult for them to pay their workers. Yaga adds, government subsidies simply won't cut it anymore.
Ang ayuda, 6,500 pesos per unit. Sa isang biyahe namin, ang biyahe mo, 300 kilometers. 150 liters ang konsumo mo, i-multiply mo ng 80 pesos yun, almost 10,000 pesos na. Pero pag isang araw yung 6,500 na ayuda. Hindi rin yata maganda rin yung sistema ng pagbigay ng ayuda. Kaya marami rin sa kanila nagre-reklamo na hindi pa rin nakakatanggap.
The driver involved in the viral hit-and-run case in Mandaluyong City files his counter-affidavit at the prosecutor's office. Our correspondent, Ara Perez, now joins us with details. Ara, what more can you tell us?
Carmina, Jose Antonio San Vicente, the SUV driver who hit security guard Christian Floraude outside the mall in Mandaluyong, was silent and did not give any statement. His legal counsel, Attorney Danny Macalino, also uttered just a few words that they submitted their counter affidavit and they will just wait for the court's decision on the frustrated murder and abandonment charges against his client. Floralde's lawyer, Attorney Federico Violena, has yet to read the counter affidavit but said they will just wait for the ruling. According to Attorney Violena, there is no scheduled hearing yet after today and the case may be up for resolution. On Floralde's non-appearance in the hearing, Violena said his client is not feeling well as he is still recovering physically and mentally from the incident. He also reiterated he does not know of any settlement between Floralde and San Vicente. He is also not privy to the financial assistance that the SUV driver's camp previously said they are willing to extend to the victim. Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Ara. Ara Perez there joining us on the line. Take care, Ara. Well, back in the newsroom, the Austrian capital of Vienna is again the world's most livable city in 2022. According to a report from the Economist Intelligence Unit, Vienna reclaimed the top spot from Auckland, which tumbled down to 34th place due to COVID restrictions. The report said good infrastructure and healthcare, plus wide opportunities for culture and entertainment, are some of the city's main charms. In second spot, Copenhagen, followed by Zurich, Calgary, and Vancouver. The index placed the war-torn Syrian capital, Damascus, as the least livable city. American singer-songwriter Billie Eilish coming to the Philippines for a concert for the first time ever. The 20-year-old multiple Grammy winner will perform at the Mall of Asia Arena on August 13. Eilish was supposed to come to the Philippines September 2020, but it was postponed due to the pandemic. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And before we go, all eyes will be on Philippine hoops prodigy Kai Soto tomorrow as he attempts to become the first homegrown Filipino to make it to the NBA. This 7'3" Soto is among the dozens of hopefuls who have made themselves available for the 2022 rookie draft. Soto is seen as a possible late second-round pick. The former Ateneo star has recently worked out with the Sacramento Kings and the Indiana Pacers. The NBA draft will take place at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.